Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and today my show is really going to rock what you believe, and this is what I think. So this is my opinion. You know, what you wish to hear and what you're hanging your hat on about healthcare, your health services, you know, your ability to get help when your body needs it, and even more, what is really healthcare and Obamacare going to do with my bottom dollar? That's what we'll be talking about today. I really thought that this was a timely topic and a very important. There are many people, you know, they are saying they're tired of people not having insurance and others who are paying for them. There are others who don't have insurance and need services but just don't get help. And then there's a third group who demand others take care of them, and that's the federal government or other subsidized programs. So why am I really doing this show today when I have committed, you know, never to talk about politics or negative words? You know, and it's really because that there are so many people who really do not understand what is going on in healthcare. You know, you can walk into the doctors and you say, I'm sitting here, take care of me, and I'm not going to leave until you do. And make sure in the meantime that I don't die. And, of course, I really don't have any money, so see you later as I'm walking out the door. You know, and how lives are really going to be changed forever. You know, I must say, however, there's always been haves and have-nots in relation to getting help from your needs, you know, finding ways to pay for it. And sadly, many will find the way that, you know, they even should be taken care of. But then again, whose job is it really to take care of everyone? The government, the insurance company, the next-door neighbor? I would also like to discuss how you could take care of yourself, and that'll be my next show. So today, I hope you're really here to hear about what is going on in healthcare, and that is what my guest sees from another vantage point, as he is in the field every day. He's in the hospital system. His name is Dr. Lawrence Gelman. He is the CEO of a major Texas hospital, and he is an expert on Obamacare. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Gelman to the show. Dr. Gelman?
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for being with us. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, I never talk, negative or politics, but I really think healthcare is so important, and everybody has such a skewed – you couldn't walk into a room of 10 people and everybody have the same answer. Do you find that too?
Well, everyone may have an opinion, but not right. Every opinion is a valid one.
Right, and I think that those opinions may be what's going to get them in trouble. With, like when I said in the beginning, you know, you're going to walk into a doctor and, here, I'm at your beck and call. What are you going to do for me? You know, that's totally different ballgame.
Right. Well, the healthcare debate in the United States today and for a number of years is completely based on mythology. The truth is never enunciated. And the underlying motivations are never elucidated. We can approach this from various different ways, but let's just go to a couple of basic premises, which I'm perfectly willing to defend for anyone who doesn't agree. One, the United States has the finest healthcare in the world by far. There really isn't even a second place. We're the only major league team that exists when it comes to healthcare. In the United States, we place a premium on health, not on dollars. And most other countries in the world, the premium is on dollars and not on health care. The problem in the United States is the government is not interested in your health or in access to health care. It is only interested in money and power. And anyone who bothers to read the Affordable Care Act will find that the only thing that's discussed are committees, penalties, taxes, agencies, things of that nature, nothing to do with the quality of health care. Let's take a look at the government-run health care as it presently exists. Mm-hmm. The two major insurances that government has are Medicaid and Medicare. Medicaid costs an average of $10,000 for every single Medicaid-eligible individual, approaching $600 billion in annual total expenditure. Medicare is even worse, averaging over $15,000 per Medicare eligible. And I'm not talking about the money that's spent by an individual. I'm talking about the average per eligible individual. Both of those numbers vastly exceed even the so-called Cadillac type of private insurances. On the other side of the coin, Medicare and Medicaid pay a fraction of what private insurance reimburses for the same procedures. Therefore, where is all the money going? Most of the money in Medicaid and Medicare that the government allocates is misappropriated, and it goes to what I like to call to is the fat cat cronies of politicians. That's where all the money is going. Approximately, in my estimation, about 70% of government spent health care dollars are misappropriated and go to the unnecessary. And that's because the only reason that Medicare and Medicaid exist has nothing to do with quality health care or access to health care, and everything to do with the removal of authority and power from the patient and the physician, and to transfer that money and power to the government, the politicians, and the bureaucrats, so they can give that money to their friends, relatives, cronies, and contributors. And that's the reality of healthcare today.
You know, and I think a lot of people don't even seem to understand. What we'll be doing in the show is I see it from my side as maybe a patient, as a person, as a family member. I have private insurance. It is the golden thing. Yes, so I'll be giving you listeners all of my side how I see it, and Dr. Gelman is going to be shedding light on what it really is. So you may find that there's going to be a going back and forth on this show today. You know, what I can also say is that I have been in the backside and filling out those Medicaid and Medicare forms in the office, and people say, oh, but my doctor gets paid for his time. He gets paid to give me this, that, or the other. You know, it's okay that I'm sitting in your office for 2 hours, you know, telling all my stories and everything, when they don't realize that a code on a piece of paper versus a certain amount for that code is not always what they are getting paid for. Now, an example, when people talk about, I have insurance, and oh my gosh, look at this whole big bill that I got from the hospital, and it's okay because my insurance is going to pay it. They really don't understand that that is not what the doctor is getting paid. That is what's billed to insurance and all of this other, and a lot gets written off. So really, what are the doctors getting paid? People have no clue what that is, or what the healthcare or a hospital or anybody, all of those basic services actually cost anymore, so they can be paid. So, like, where's all this fluff going? Why do we have to put down a code that says $475 for 1 hour to sit with, a regular primary care doctor, when in actuality that primary care doctor might get for that same amount of time $15-$20? You know, $15-$20 for an hour he's sitting in the room. What are his other costs? And it's the controversy there.
I don't think the patients, I don't think they couldn't care less about what you and I get paid. Right. And let's look at people realistically.
But that's important.
Not in this nirvana world. It's important to us. It's not important to them.
Right.
The bottom line is that people in most of the world really don't care about their health care. Unless they're sick, of course, and then they get in line in some socialized clinic and get some antiquated medicine, even if it's available. There's no health care in Cuba or Haiti or much of the rest of the world, but there's no riots in the streets. There are no protests.
Right.
There are no government programs. You know, this is a contrived political issue. It is not a health care issue. The problems in the United States as far as health care have nothing to do with the delivery of health care and everything to do with government intervention. Let's look historically at Medicare. Medicare came into being as a political issue of the Democrat Party and Lyndon Johnson, 1964. At the time, and it was instituted at 65 years of age. What a coincidence that was the life expectancy of the average American, 65. I'm sure that was not taken into account by our geniuses in government. Okay. At the time in 1965, heart surgery had yet to be developed. There were no angioplasties or MRI or CAT scans. There were no statins. There were no beta blockers. Well, maybe beta blockers. There were no medications of any consequence, no radiation therapy. There was no interventional radiation. There was nothing. That was nothing. And so therefore our government, which is a bunch of venal criminals, they created a program politically motivated, anticipating no expenditure other than and a political gain, because most Americans, only a small number of Americans lived beyond the age of 65, and even those that did, there were no hip or knee implants, there was no heart surgery, angioplasties, endoscopies, lasers, fiber optics, nothing. But guess what happened? The medical industry, as was much of the rest of the United States, advanced technologically. Now we have all of these available products, so you have a government that's faced with a real problem. They created a bogus program for political gain, which they expected to have no expenditure, and now we have a population that lives 15 years longer, and there's accessibility to a very advanced product, which is costly. And so Medicare, which was predicted to never cost more than $7 billion in 2010 dollars, now costs over $500 billion. And the government has been caught with their hands in the cookie jar, and they have to figure a way out. And there's only one way out, and that is to take over the entire system of health care so they can confiscate all the money in health care, not to benefit the people, but to benefit the government. People do not know what they never had. We take all of these advances in healthcare for granted, and they didn't exist for my parents or their parents or my grandparents. They did not exist. They've existed only for the last generation or two. Now, what's going to happen with government healthcare is what's happening in the rest of the world. There will be a cessation of advances. So all the great things that might have happened will no longer occur because the government will not allow research to be done. And they will deny access to health care for every reason they can think of. Oh, you're over 70 years old, you're too old. Look at the argument they had with Dick Cheney and whether he deserved to have a transplant because he was too old, 70-something years old. That's what you're going to be seeing all the time. There's going to be denial of health care for all kinds of reasons, and which the government will contrive for no other purpose than to save money by denying health care. And they're already creating those programs. You will not get the health care you need. They are reducing the number of specialists, so even if health care is paid for, there will not be the specialist to provide the health care. And they're creating an entire system which is going to make the health care delivery in the United States more primitive, more costly, more primitive, less accessible, basically Europe.
Right. Well, you know what? I had spoken recently to another guest that I had on. It was in healthcare in Canada. And we had got into this same discussion. And she said, you know, Canada is in big, dire straits. I said, what do you mean? She said, because of the socialized medicine. And she went on to say that because everybody believed that they had health care and they were covered, they could go about and do their own social or lifestyle or whatever issues, and they knew that no matter what, they were going to be taken care of. So there's an increase in all kinds of things that you shouldn't do with yourself, and because they knew whatever they did, they were going to be not responsible for themselves. You know, and you had said in the beginning, too, you know, you don't know what you didn't have. Well, why are we still putting up with a lot of these pharmacy commercials on TV? You know, why do we need to know about those drugs and then we as consumers turn around and go to the doctor to demand it? You know, sometimes I wonder if television and internet is actually a positive thing or is it not, you know? Because people go in and they're, you know, hey, I want a heart transplant. My body's dead, you know, and they will doctor shop until they find that one that will be able to do that for them. I have been with people that have done that, you know. My heart says it's not good. I want a new one, you know, and they're going to keep doing that. And that is a serious, that's a costly effort right there.
Well, you're talking about Canada, which compared to much of the rest of the world isn't all that bad. Canada has a cardiac care center for every 1 million Canadians. Mm-hmm. The United States has a cardiac care center for every 100,000 Americans. robotic-assist devices, which is a standard of care for prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. There's one unit in Canada for every 4 million Canadians. There's a unit in the United States for every 200,000 Americans. If I'm a urologist in Canada and there's only 8 robotic assist devices in the entire country, the odds are, even if I know, even if I learn how to use the machine, I'm not going to have access to it. Therefore, there are no specialists in Canada. One of the problems that is not understood about Canada is that not only does it take a long time to get anything done, right, it takes even a longer time to be, even be approved to get something done.
Correct.
And that is a number that they conceal very adeptly. Furthermore, the average cost in Canada for healthcare is not that much less than in the United States. And I don't believe any of their numbers anyway, because the numbers come from the government itself, and government numbers cannot be believed at any level. But people will acclimate to whatever environment they live. So mm-hmm. if you're in Haiti and you have no health care, well, you acclimate to it. And if you're right. in the United States and they take away your health care, then you acclimate to that. I don't put much faith in the average American anymore. I think we have become a country where the parasites now outnumber the producers, and they've all been brainwashed by the media and the government, which is the same thing, actually. There really isn't any solution other than the creation of a new country. And that's kind of what I look forward to.
And so I, too. Well, you know what you always say, you said just a minute ago, sorry, about denial of health care for age. I can tell you, if people do not believe that that is true, then they really need to sit down and study English and put some words together and define those words in a sentence, because I think when people see or hear one or two words out of a sentence, as such as eye candy, they believe that, and they really didn't listen to the whole thing, like just like reading a title of something and not even knowing what the text is. Because I was with a healthcare provider, and he was a heart specialist, and he did bypass surgery, and a woman came in, and she was 92, and she says, "I want a bypass. I have good insurance. I want a bypass." And he's like, "No, you're not getting a bypass from me." And he was the only one, you know, within several hundred miles. So really, that was her only alternative. And she was extremely healthy, you know, and she had her little apple trees, and she walked up it every single day, and she really was in good shape. She just had some vessels that weren't working well, and she couldn't make it to the top of the tree. So really, you know, that is something that might be an extreme. But then you look at it, and when in Canada, they turn around, they say it takes a long time to get care or to get an appointment or to get a procedure. That is the same thing as denial of care. It's just reworded differently, because by the time you may get that care, well, you may not need it. You might be dead. So is that good or bad? But maybe that might be just how you look at it. How can we always look at it? Do I walk in and say, I have to have my bypass by Friday and somebody's going to do it? If I was in Canada, I might get my bypass in 2 years from now, right? Or maybe if I'm over, like you said, or if I'm over 92, do I really need that bypass? So how can even people sit down and say, I'm fighting for Obama's healthcare policy because it's going to do this, that, and the other, and my doctor told me it's going to do this, that, and the other, and, well, I'm going to go for the one that I think. You know, so really, could they have even made a choice on that? Or really, did they even have a choice on it, and this was just a process that just happened?
Well, what happens in any kind of a nationalized system is the denial of any kind of choice. The same thing would happen if we had one car company, one cell phone company, one computer company. You can imagine what kind of products we would have. And the very same people who would say, no, it's a bad idea to have one car company, will immediately say that it's perfectly fine to have one healthcare company. I don't know. I have had the experience to speak with quite a number of congressmen and senators because of my position at the hospital. And I can assure you, these people should not be allowed to drive a car. They haven't the slightest idea what they're doing. They're arrogant beyond anyone's understand. no one has experienced arrogance until you speak to a congressman or a senator or a president. And no one has had a combination of arrogance and ignorance, which is endemic to the political class. And so they cannot. So therefore, they cannot be taught, they cannot be trained, and they couldn't care less. Their only interest is in their own self-aggrandizement and how to increase their power, how to get reelected, how to develop a constituency that they can buy off. Once again, that's Democrat and Republican. They're both bipartisan class of mafiosos. And that's it. And so I think if there's anything I'd like the listener to understand is we need to get away from this idea that there are those in government who are kind-hearted but are just bad managers. The government and the system and the bankruptcy of the nation is not due to mismanagement. It is intentional. And it is intentional in order to create a population dependent upon a small, elitist, primarily northeastern group of individuals. That should be no surprise to anybody because it's exactly the system that they have in China or the Soviet Union or in Cuba and in most of the rest of the world. That is the way the systems are. And to think that our politicians somehow have a moral quality that is superior to the politicians in other nations is completely absurd because the psychology of all politicians is exactly the same. It doesn't matter what the color of their skin is. It doesn't matter what language they speak. And it doesn't matter what country they live in. They're all basically the same, which is why when they gather together in their little galas, they all love each other. The only thing about politicians, they have a competition the same way that the Boston Red Sox have a competition with the New York Yankees. But the fact of the matter is they all belong to the same league and they play by the same rules and they all have the same psychology.
It seems such a defeatist thing when you think about it, you know. But you know what you can always say, too, though, is when we say about healthcare and everybody said, oh, it's going to be a different day, it's going to be a different day. Do they think that on Friday the old way of doing things is going to stop and everybody's going to have this big illusion kind of clearing of their brain and their old patterns and their old way of doing things and on Monday it's going to be something new and great? And I honestly think that people believe that. I seriously think they believe that. And is not that... That is like the greatest disservice of the whole thing. You know, and really it's not even that you're looking, like we said in the beginning, about are we really, you know, out there clamoring because we want to have health care and we're worried that nobody will take care of us at the end. No, you're really out there because you don't want to pay the fees in the meantime, right?
As I said before, we have become a nation of parasites. And so... the people that you're talking about marching up and down in the streets, they're right. Parasites, and they want someone else to pay for their health care. They have no intention of producing anything, and they're perfectly satisfied with getting what they can get as long as they don't have to pay for it. The psychology of the average human being, unfortunately, is that, well, I really don't care too much how miserable my life is as long as everybody has the same miserable life. And we don't want to have anyone that has a better life. So as long as we're all in the same quagmire of misery, then we're all satisfied. And I see that every single day. That is what our government has turned the American people into. That is why the system of public education exists, to indoctrinate and create a dependent class. And that's the nation. The problem is well beyond health care. Healthcare, the issues on healthcare are nothing but a symptom of what's going on in this nation today. And the bottom line is we have a nation of parasites and a smaller group of producers. Government is the biggest parasite that mankind has ever created. Therefore, government has a sympathetic bond to all parasites. That is why government likes parasitism. That is why government thrives on dependency. And so all the other discussions, foreign policy, energy policy, healthcare, all evolve the same way because the people who make the decisions have the same psychology. And, you know, so I know we're supposed to be talking about health care. I think I've already given more than enough data there to indicate how corrupt the government is and what its intent, what its purpose is. The one point, if there's one point that I want to get across, is that the bankruptcy of the nation and the descent of the nation into oblivion is not because of mismanagement. It is intentional on the part of the government and the bureaucrats to create a nation dependent upon the government. If you look at Stalin and Castro and Hugo Chavez and all the other dictators of the world, they would prefer, much prefer, to have a failed nation where they can be in charge versus a thriving nation of independent producing individuals. That is why Cuba is a disaster, a basket case. That is why Russia is a basket case. And that is why much of Europe is becoming a basket case. And that is why much of the United States is already a basket case, and pretty much all of it will become a basket case. Because the parasites are in charge, and they cater to the parasitic classes in the United States by taking from the producer and giving to the parasite. And that can only go on for so long before you have a collapse of the country.
You know, and I think to the listeners, what Dr. Gelman is saying about parasites is this is what I think of it as. It's almost like when you think of a piece of meat and you have maggots on it, and those maggots have just got to keep going and getting all the meat that they can, you know, and they will keep going at their own vantage until there is none left, you know, and it's just like sucking the blood out of people and just getting them where they need to be with total disrespect for the other person, thoughts, or anything. And how difficult that will be when people may have to come to that realization of actually where things will be happening. And I don't know. I can really anyone say the world is going to change and that's good and I'm happy and I'm excited? I think you and I may say that, but how many other people do you think would really be willing to say that they would be excited for that?
Well, most are in the eye of the hurricane and don't even know anything is going on. We are a consumerist society, and that's very, very good. And there's a lot of volition in what we can obtain. When volition is decreased, that's when you start having problems. If Medicare was good, if Social Security was good, why are they involuntary? Why are doctors required by law to accept payments that based upon government dictates? Where is the, if these programs were good, if they were positive, if people wanted them, they wouldn't need to be involuntary. The very fact that you're forced into these systems indicates that people really don't want them. And the reason people don't want them is because they do not work. And but what is happening now is the government is going to force us all into a Medicare, Medicaid type system. And so you as a physician and I as a physician are no longer going to be talking to our patient. What we're going to be doing is gathering data, emailing it off to some agency in Washington,
right,
D.C., and waiting for a return email dictating to us what we may or may not do, what procedures we may or may not do, and how much we're going to get paid for it. And don't call us, we'll call you.
And they people
to a great extent, that's already happening.
Yes, and actually that does happen. I mean, how many times have we filled out those insurance forms, let's send it to the insurance company for, quote, pre-authorization, and it comes back, well, you'll have it denied, or it'll be partial, or we don't think that you should have to have this certain type procedure that attached to that other type of procedure. You know, and then where do you go from that? You know, does the patient think that everything's being totally taken care of, and they're just sitting back like, you know, it's almost like they're sprawling in a recliner and saying, fix me, here's my card. And it's,
yeah,
you know,
but,
and don't know any of that minutia that has to occur.
Right. But, you know, it's a problem that's really easily solved. It won't be done because it takes power from the government. But if every single American, regardless of income or anything else, received a $6,000 voucher, let's say,
right,
which is more than the average cost of private insurance. I think the average insurance for an individual costs between $5,000 and $6,000. So if every American got $6,000, that would actually be less of an expenditure than we're spending now for health care. And that would allow you and me to decide what kind of health care we want, whether we want this or that, this medication or that medication, this doctor or that doctor. And the insurance companies would fall over themselves to get that money, because right now they're falling over themselves to get that money already. So, but why won't the government do that? The government won't do that because that gives the consumer the power over his or her own health care. And the last thing the government wants is for the individual to have the power over their own lives, when government exists for one purpose alone, and that is to control the lives of others. So the problems really have simple solutions, but that doesn't mean they're ever going to be implemented, because it is counter to the psychology of the political class.
But then we also look at it, too. Don't you think that the patients are pretty much the ones to blame, too? Because will they even think that they need to do something with themselves, or are they even going to care to do anything to themselves and then wait until it's over that $6,000 or whatever and then just cry, poor, poor me? Aren't those?
No, let me tell you. When it's your own money, you take an interest. Like if I'm going to go buy a cell phone and it's my money, I take an interest in what I'm buying. The same thing will be with healthcare. They each will take an interest in what, since it's their own money, because that's what the voucher would be, their own money.
And I think what will happen is it will definitely raise the percentage of people that do. There'll always be those outliers, those other people who just could give two hoots, but you know, there always will be that. So I think the people in the middle that are the ones that are complaining right now, that may be perfect, and that would definitely ease.
Why should the country be dependent upon the indolent? And why should that be? I mean, where did this idea come from that is perfectly acceptable for the government to put a gun to my head to pay for somebody else's food and somebody else's health care? If someone came up to you or me in the street and put a gun to us and said, give me money because my family is hungry, we would not find that acceptable behavior. But when the government does exactly the same thing, we think not only is that acceptable, but laudatory. I mean, the entire psychology of the country is completely warped. And I'll tell you something else. What you were saying before, that, people will just kind of behave any way they want to and kind of neglect taking care of themselves, assuming someone's going to take care of them later. The thing is, when there's a cost directly related to your mismanagement of your own life, that kind of puts a brake on that irresponsible behavior. Irresponsible behavior increases when there's no negative reinforcement associated with it. Right now, we actually have positive reinforcement to bad behavior by rewarding it. Oh, your child has a attention deficit disorder. Here's some money. Here's free medication. Here's free therapy. Oh, you want to have your fifth kid out of wedlock with five different fathers? No problem. Here's money. Here's housing. Here's food stamps. Here's milk. You know, go ahead. We're paying for all your costs. And so what happens? You have an explosion of irresponsible behavior. I mean, we know that if you reward a certain kind of behavior, you get more of it. And so if irresponsible behavior is rewarded, you get more of it. If productive behavior is penalized, as it is in this country, you get less of it. I mean, it's really pretty basic psychology.
You know, we always talk about changing habits and how that happens. And we could probably look at the idea of vaccine and about the herd issue. I mean, with Hep B, did everybody really need Hep B at birth? Or maybe we just started to do it then so that because it was in three series and we knew that the people would start coming back and then they would be able to then have early childhood health care. You know, so, but where does it come to? People said, oh, well, I'm just not going to get my Hep B now. You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have problems later on. Oh, well, I'll deal with them. And then they're complaining later on saying, well, you know, I didn't want to follow that paradigm. So where is the penalty right, even in that? And don't we need penalties in some situations? In other words, so first you have an idea. You say, this is what we're going to do. And you'll get a certain amount of people. Then we'll say, this is what you're going to do because we think it's best, and you'll have the positive things. And then you'll get the next one where you're going to say, it's a series of three, and you have to do it. And then we'll say, if you don't, the next thing is, if you don't do it, there are penalties. And that's your last phase to catch up all of the rest of the people behind you.
Right, but there are issues of public health. I remember as a child being required to get the polio vaccine
Correct.
Before you could go to school. And I don't see much problem with that, but
no.
That was a policy created by healthcare providers, not by a government official. The government helped in the dissemination of the vaccine, and there was no cost to the individual, and I think that's perfectly acceptable when you're talking about an
right.
issue like that. So and on these other things where you're saying, well, I opt not to get that vaccine because of whatever reason, well, then there will be a very severe price to pay if you end up with hepatitis B or something
right.
along those lines. So I think there are penalties, but there are places for public health care policy to be implemented. But the bottom line is the distinction between what used to be and what is now is what used to be is that healthcare policy public healthcare policy was based upon recommendations of healthcare providers and mm-hmm. and was not based on economics. Today, it's being based upon politics, upon what politicians want, and is based
right.
completely upon economics. It's a completely different set of principles.
It's a totally different thing. You know, let's all just have everybody do this and make sure at the end of the season, if we don't use all the vaccine, well, we need to put a bigger push because we still have some to sell in our bank. You know, how many times have they done that?
Well, you can say that with a lot of other medications. Once again, that's when the profit motive
yeah.
takes over.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, look, I'm going to just say, as far as integrity and honesty, I'm not
mm-hmm.
saying every physician is completely honest and has the highest integrity, but I will say this. As a professional class, no
mm-hmm.
group of individuals has a higher level of integrity than physicians. It may not be 100%, but it's as high as humankind is capable of doing. And I'm very happy to allow healthcare policy be determined by healthcare professionals. I have, you know, confidence in that. What I am uncomfortable with is having healthcare policy being dictated to me by Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, and George Bush. And that's the reason we have the mess we're in now, is because the people dictating policy don't know what the heck they're doing. And it's not just healthcare; it's energy and foreign policy and everything else in the United States. Because you have a bunch of people that are making decisions based upon influence, based upon prejudice, based upon self-interest, and by people who have no expertise over the subject that they are administering.
I think so many times, I have said that a million times, you know, it's all about the photo op, the eye candy, you know, and just what's out there. Everybody was coming down. I live in New Orleans. Everybody came down here. We've all got opinions on how this is all going to clean up. We all know we're going to clean up the BP oil mess. We're all going to fix it. We're going to do this, that, and the other. Great. And you know what they did? They all flexed in. They all gave their opinions. They all showed up for those pictures. They all said they were going to save money, give money, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The oil is still in the water. It's still happening. So what? And the people are still sick. You know, so you look at it, someone coming into something that they knew absolutely nothing about, it's almost like they spew all of this stuff out, and then they turn around and say, oops, see you later, got to go. And that's exactly what you don't want, as you're saying, with the healthcare, is these people coming in saying, we're going to fix it this way because we see it from the outside and we know how to fix things. Well, do you really? it would be almost like Donald Trump, like maybe buying, you know, 10 doctor's offices and say, okay, for blood pressure, I want you to do this and I want you to do that and make sure, you know, if a kid comes in under 10 years old that they had this, this, and this. Not going to happen, you know? And definitely that is the difference, don't you think?
Well, sure. I mean, you mentioned New Orleans, and I remember when FEMA finally showed up there. I mean, what was their response? Did they actually go out there and drain the swamps or put one brick on top of another or clean out a neighborhood? No, they sat down at a desk and filled out forms. You showed up there and said, my house was destroyed.
Yeah, and it was even worse when they came down here and they said what they were doing on the radios and everything. This is a perfect example as we're talking. They came down and they said, everybody down here, we're going to take care of everybody, blah, blah, blah. Well, number one, they didn't take care of everybody. All of these people who gave out money and said that all of these big groups, you know, we're giving money, we're raising all this money on TV and everything, people never saw 5 cents of that money. Is the people in the place still whole? No. Is all the things that FEMA came here and supposedly gave money to fixed? No. They put up all these billion-dollar pumps now, and the pumps are rusted. It's only 6 years, 7 years later now, and they have to be replaced. So where are you going to get that money from now? You know, people don't realize about what happens when it devastates an area. Maybe you need to just walk away. Just what we're saying with healthcare. You know, hey, it's just not working, guys. Call it quits, and let's see what we could start from scratch. You know, because you just got to start to cut your losses. You know, sometimes when you go in to try to remediate stuff, you spend a whole lot more money, a whole lot more time, and a whole lot more on studies, which is just garbage. And then your costs have been risen because, oh, well, you know, hey, just like with the green things, you know, I want to go buy something that's green, put that green tag on there, you just increase your costs about 2 to 3 times. So what are you going to do in healthcare? Maybe we just need to cut our losses and just chuck it all. Like you said, with the $6,000 voucher, maybe that is the best answer.
Well, it's always best to allow the people to decide their own fates. And I wanted to say something about the parasitic class. I mean, I think there are many out there who may be hearing that and think I'm talking about poor people. I'm not. I'm talking about rich people. I'm talking because that's the biggest parasitic dollar consumer is the rich. You bring up the point about these pumps, which cost an enormous amount of money and which turns out to be that they're not holding up very well. Well, you can bet anything that the manufacturer of that pump, of those pumps, had some kind of insider relationship with a bureaucrat or politician, and that is why you get that. And that's why you don't want government to make the decisions, because what influences government is not what's best or what will work best, but which will give the greatest amount of money to the friends and relatives and cronies and contributors of politicians. And the mistake a lot of people make is they think that big business and big government and big labor are at odds with each other. That's not true at all. The bottom line is that big government, big labor, and big business are on one side, and the average producing American is on the other side. And we are outgunned. And you know, the worst part about it is that they're using our money against us. You know, so it's I think just a really important thing is to understand that this is a systemic problem, not just indigenous to healthcare, but throughout the United States. You know, they make a big deal about healthcare costs in the United States consuming 15% of the gross domestic product. Well, what the heck is so important about the other 85% that 15% is too much for healthcare? I mean, most Americans want to be healthy. And nobody wants to be unhealthy. So if we want to spend 15% of our domestic product on health care, what the heck is wrong with that? You know, they talk about, well, Americans spend more on health care than people in any other country. Right. That's true. And we spend more for cell phones. We spend more for food. We spend more for automobiles. We spend more for cable television. And we spend more for everything else as well, entertainment and all of that. And television sets, and you just name it, we spend more. But no one seems to be worried about that too much. But somehow healthcare, which in my opinion, my biased opinion, is the most important product that the United States has, why 15% of the dollar expenditure on healthcare, that's too much? What's so important about the other 85%?
You know, when you had said about the amount of money and what's important, you know, I can remember, and I'll just use this as a point of reference because it just jumped into my head so profoundly, is that after Katrina, everybody had gotten their money. And they took that money and they bought those things that they believed would fix them, you know, like a big screen TV, a double wide refrigerator, whatever. But then when it came time to go back to the reality of it, and they had to find another place to live, like an apartment or whatever, and they only had a certain amount of money, and they got a smaller apartment. And they said, but I can't take that smaller apartment. I guess I'll have to go have somebody pay my housing. So when the housing people gave them enough money to be able to get their house, they took that money and they said, but that house is still too small. It can't fit my big screen TV. And you're thinking, wait a minute. You know, where did that paradigm circle go wrong? You know? It just went totally off. We just gave them money, and then we turned around and are given the money again, and they still were just doing their creature habits, you know? And I don't know. We think of this all the time. You know, if you're given the money for the health care and you're wondering, where is it going? Where is it going? So maybe I think we'd like to talk maybe in this next half an hour or so. What do you see in how patients should come in and be able to take care of themselves? How do you see that? Because everybody has a different version on this. Is it okay if I sit down and eat whatever I want? And am I taking care of my health care? But I still go to the doctor all the time and do what he tells me to do? What does healthcare responsibility for a patient look like to you? I mean, you have a hospital. You know what you would like to see.
Ultimately, the answer to all human ills is education. And then being able to make your decisions based upon that education. I know sometimes there's a back and forth. But the bottom line is you say, okay, we now take as accepted truth that smoking is bad for your health, and we have all kinds of evidence for that. And so if you choose to smoke, at least you understand that you're willing to accept the risk of smoking. Alcohol consumption, the same thing, and everything else. As long as the information is available to the people, and I do know sometimes there's some extreme elements out there, but eventually the truth does come through. The snake oil salesman eventually does disappear. That I think it's always best if you allow the individual to decide so that the repercussions of their decision are that they bear the brunt of them and not somebody else. And in that way, you learn. But education is always the answer. So the way I would handle it is I would say, allow the people to make the decision, educate them at the best way that we possibly can, and allow them to bear the brunt of their own decisions. And I think that's the way that, you know, that's not an original idea. That was mm-hmm. the basis of the founding of the nation, which created the strongest nation that ever lived. And our deviation from that philosophy is why the country is so much problems today. So that would be my answer. My one word answer to pretty much everything is education.
Mine would be a tagline to that is get out of the rescue business. Because if they turn around and they say that this is my answer and this is what I'm going to do, right, and then have the repercussions of that, what's going to happen? Should it end right there? Because when you turn around, you say, yes, I know I got cancer anyway, blah, 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 and I'm going to die. But wait a minute, you know, you have to rescue me. So maybe that part needs to stop.
Well, who said,
or change.
Yes, but who created that you have to rescue me? The government created you have
Correct.
To rescue me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to rescue anybody, or we shouldn't have to rescue anyone that we don't want to. I mean, if somebody has a dangerous habit, whether it's consumption of drugs, alcohol, or jumping off cliffs, I don't know, why does someone else have to bear the responsibility of any untoward effect? I mean, if I decide to do cliff diving for a career and I smash my head on a rock, why isn't anybody else's responsibility to take care of me I mean, if the family of that individual has a bunch of money to pay to be taken care of, well, then fine. But otherwise, why should I have to bear the brunt of somebody else's misbehavior? But that's what the system the government created, in which we now have to. It's like George, you know, that foolish George Bush and his No Child Left Behind. I mean, imagine if you have a Olympic race, the 100-meter dash, and the rules are nobody can be left behind. But that's a pretty dull race, where everybody has to finish it exactly, and the fastest guy has to slow down to the slowest guy. Okay, imagine if you had a basketball game where no child left behind. Uh-oh, we just got two extra points. No, we have to wait for the other guy. And no matter how long it takes him to get those points, you're just going to have to wait and allow them to do that. Who'd be watching? Nobody would watch any more basketball games. But look at that's the philosophy that our politicians wish us to live by, and it's completely nonsensical. It is not the way the country was supposed to be. But that's the way that it's becoming. So, the politicians, politicians do not invent, they do not innovate. I don't know any politician that ever won an award that has any patents for any inventions or any innovative ideas. You know, they win these nonsensical Nobel Peace Prizes and all that. But politicians, let's look at the mindset of a politician is they want to control what they can see, and they're uncomfortable with what they cannot see. Therefore, they fear the unknown, and it's not their psychology. They can only live within the known world. That's why the Wright brothers were not politicians. Edison was not a politician. Albert Einstein was not a politician, and no politician could ever be Albert Einstein. Because it's a different way of thinking. It's a free mind versus a controlled mind. You must remember, the only reason anyone goes into politics, and there's one reason only, and that is to control the lives of other people. That is the only purpose for going into politics. And that is not a purpose that the creative individual has. The creative individual is not interested in controlling anybody's life. The creative person is interested in creating. And that is why no one in government is creative, because it's a different type of psychology.
So going back to possibly the hospital situation and setting, how would you see, I can see, we say let's just drop off and give this 6,000 or whatever, that might be an option. You know, there's a lot of people right now who are saying, I'd like to just go form my own city, and I'm going to, get away from the U.S. and, these states that want to be independent and everything. And when you look at that, you say, if I want to be independent, then I will handle my own repercussions. So they are simply do understand that. But then when they need hospital care, then they always turn around and then they go into the hospital and it's like, okay, well, we tried it as far as we knew, but now we don't know this part. How does that happen or fit in?
Well, because the individual has their $6,000 voucher in which they've bought Blue Cross or Aetna insurance, and they buy that every year, or they take the $6,000 and they put it in a bank account for medical issues, and they go about their business, and then they need to get their health care, and then they can say, okay, then the decision is, well, which doctor, which hospital, and then they come to me and they say, you know what, maybe you need this, you need a hip implant, all right? What are my options? Well, we have A, B, C hip implants. A costs $10,000, B costs $20,000, C costs $30,000, and, well, you decide, okay? And that's the way it's supposed to be. But the way it's developing is I don't pay for my health care. I need a hip implant. I show up and I say, give me the most expensive thing you got, okay?
Right.
And that's why healthcare costs go through the roof.
Right.
But the big corporations love that because they make more money on their more expensive hip implants than less expensive, and now the government is in bed, metaphorically speaking, with the manufacturer, and they make sure that the only hip implant available is the most expensive one, and so that the manufacturer gets the most money they can possibly get. And then, of course, that's something that's already going pretty very prevalent in our society today.
And that process is definitely prevalent because even, let's say in food, if I have, you know, $100 on Friday, am I going to go eat for five of us at Outback? Am I going to go buy that food at Whole Foods? Am I going to go to my local grocery store? Am I going to go to McDonald's? You know, you kind of know what you should be doing. It's just that in healthcare, there's just some other illusion. It's an illusion of what you should have,
But it's a created illusion, actually.
Absolutely.
I mean, the thing is, if you could go buy as much food as you wanted, irrespective of the cost, no matter how expensive it was, or even the fanciest restaurants, irrespective of the cost, then that's what everybody would be doing. The reason we don't do that is because we can't afford it. But in healthcare, they've created a system that says, oh, you're a smoker, you're obese, you take drugs, and you dive off of cliffs for a living, and you have no insurance, but you want the most expensive heart valve in the world, well, then you get it. And that is the problem we have, where you're not responsible for your own actions. And the irresponsible person gets rewarded. And that's a problem. If you remove that component, but the government won't remove that component because that is the component that makes the individual dependent upon the government. And that's what the government wants. They want everyone to be dependent on the government. And that is why the system is the way it is because it benefits government to be that way. Doesn't benefit the people, doesn't benefit society, doesn't benefit the physician or the caregiver, but it benefits the government and it benefits the rich upper class manufacturer that is a crony or contributor to the politician. I mean, that's the way the system functions, and that's because that's the way the government wants it to function.
So I was wondering if possibly you could shed a little light on, I know a lot of people are asking about long-term care and medical homes, and what your thoughts are about those, where we are now, where they go, you know, and what people really are not listening to.
Well, you have these what seem to be good ideas, medical homes, home health care, things like that, which on paper seem to be good ideas. Oh, let's be preventive. Let's move away from expensive care. Let's try to get ahead of the game. The problem is, once again, that's being managed by government. So what do you have? Enormous waste and fraud. That's what you have, and ineffective home health care, because the shysters have moved into the field, charging for, you know, have with their incompetent nurses, charging outrageous sums of money to the taxpayer, and really not providing very good care at all. So the ideas sometimes seem good, but they're not. They're not really. In fact, the direction of healthcare today is completely the wrong direction. The United States healthcare is the best in the world because of specialty care and high technology. What does the government want? Non-specialty care and no utilization of technology. So what do you have? You're going to have terrible health care, and that's what the government wants. They don't want access to high technology or specialists. And what are they doing? Okay, they're funding primary care and defunding specialty care. They're increasing payments to primary care, decreasing payments to specialty care. And so what's going to happen? Less specialists, more primary care. What does that result in? More chronic disease, less cures, and ultimately more expensive health care. But how do you measure the expense? In dollars or in loss of health? The government doesn't care if you're healthy or not. In fact, the sooner you disappear, the better it is. The government prefers it. And so the less they can spend on you while you're around, that's the way they like it. That's the system that's going to develop. Look, everything that's great in a nation, whether it's cell phones, laptops, automobile, whatever it happens to be, is always developed by private individuals. Sometimes one individual, a Michael Dell, a Steve Jobs, a Bill Gates, a Sam Walton. You know, we actually have names to individuals for these massive enterprises because why? Because the ideas were generated from either one or a small number of people. The Wright brothers, two guys. Alexander Graham Bell, one guy. And Thomas Edison, one guy. Yes, they had associates and help, but the thing is that these great ideas come from individuals, free individuals that are able to think on their own. That's not the way government functions. Government functions by committee, by consensus. It doesn't matter if the consensus is right or wrong. It only matters if they're in the majority or not. And so so these things, they're just simply incapable of doing what needs to be done. Private sector healthcare has produced the MRI and the CAT scan, all the medications, all the great medications, the hip implant, the heart surgery, LASIK surgery for the eyes. I mean, everything you can imagine has all come out of the private sector by individuals that have made great discoveries to benefit all the rest of us. That process is going to be destroyed by the government because the government doesn't understand it, and they don't like it because they hate independent thought. Why would we think that where individual initiative and innovative skills and genius, which allows us to have all of this coming from outside the government, why would we think that somehow healthcare controlled by the government would give us innovation and would give us advances? Why would we think that when we know it doesn't work in anything else? But that is the brainwashing that we've undergone in our system of education, through the media, disseminating propaganda spewed out by the government. It doesn't make sense.
Well, yet big we bucks believe it. Makes sense. Big bucks is the only thing that makes sense, because just this morning I was listening to something on the television, and it was local news, and I don't recall at this moment what exactly it was. And it says that the government is giving them $2 million to study it. Well, of course you're going to take the money. You're going to go study it, and you're going to give the results back to the government. But it's like $2 million. You know, if all of these studies that they're doing that don't even produce an action or find out, something sort of like, let's do a study on, I want to know why this plant grows on this corner. Okay, well, right now we have a problem. Someone didn't get their health care next week. Can we take the $2 million and shunt it that way and not worry about the plant on the corner? You know, what are we spending money on? And it's really just government studies, government issues. They want to know this, they want to know that. And that was just something small, because when they came here after Katrina and after BP and blah, 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 let's study the wildlife. Nothing has changed. Let's study the wetlands. Nothing has changed. There's not 5 cents spent out there, you know.
Well,
and then
dear.
it's for lack of a better word, it's diarrhea of the pocket, as I call it. That's all they're doing. It's just going everywhere, and there's no place for it.
There's an entire industry out there which shows individuals how to get government grants.
Yes.
People don't come up with an original idea and then look for funding. They look at what the government pays for, and then they create something which fits in what the government wants.
Yep.
You know, I lived in New Orleans for a year. I did a 1 year at Charity Hospital. I lived in Metairie, and I really liked New Orleans. I thought it was a really kind of a neat place. And I worked in that charity hospital, so that was an interesting battleground. So, I mean, I know New Orleans pretty well. I like New Orleans.
And we learned, but you learned so much, I'm sure, when you were there. You learned, you know, an incredible amount of things you may not have seen other places.
That's for sure. It's like, here, they throw you in the middle of the pool. Go ahead and swim. Yeah, I saw amazing things over there, and a lot of amazing people in the healthcare industry. A lot of under severe economic shortfalls, but you know what? They did it. You know,
they figured it out.
The people there, they did it. They if left to their own devices, they were able to do it. You know where they couldn't do it? In the VA hospital. because they were never left to their own devices. You see, in charity hospital, the difference, okay, they didn't have enough personnel because they never had enough money. But a charity hospital, if I needed a patient to get a chest x-ray, I'd get a wheelchair, go take the patient down to x-ray, put the patient in front of an x-ray machine, go behind a little shield, hold your breath, take the x-ray, take the film, get it developed, read the x-ray, and that's what I did, or blood work or whatever. At the VA hospital, you couldn't do that. Because if I said, can I have that wheelchair, take the patient downstairs? I said, no, that's a union thing. The union guy has to take the wheelchair, patient down in the wheelchair. So, okay, where's the union guy? Oh, he's sick today. What?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so you were never allowed to do anything at the VA hospital because their bureaucracy would not permit it. And so because there was no freedom there. And it was just this incredible bureaucratic hierarchy which you couldn't penetrate. Now, I worked at four different VA hospitals, one in the VA over there in Louisiana and New Orleans, the one in Wood up in Milwaukee, the one in Alabama, and the one in San Antonio, Audie Murphy in San Antonio. And the funny thing was, they were all the only difference between the way they functioned was in the accent of the people. Everybody, the whole system worked exactly the same way, inefficient and corrupt, where they couldn't care less about the individual. I feel so sorry for our veterans because they have been shoved into the worst healthcare system in the United States and one of the worst in the world, the VA system, which exists only to maintain a certain bureaucracy. Okay, fast forward, let me see, that was like 82. Fast forward 30 years, my daughter, at VA, and the same thing. She goes to these VA hospitals, same thing. Nothing has changed.
Yes.
Exactly the same psychology, exactly the same way of doing things. No change.
Well, you know, and you can also compare it to, let's say, who we were talking about in the beginning. You know, if I really need to have something done, am I going to go in and demand services? You know, when you go into the hospital, and you may go into some of these other hospitals, like you said, charity, they're not going to say, well, I need an MRI today, and she said she's having back pain, so I'm just going to take it of that one spot on her neck where I think it is, and, you know, and then the next day, well, we'll go back, and I really didn't see anything there, well, maybe we'll take it in another spot, and then, well, that didn't show me, so maybe we'll do something again. You know, that occurs in hospitals. That doesn't occur in some of the charity hospitals. They are more precise because they know I get one shot at this. I better pay attention. What do I think is the best to do? Because they know that their pockets are not infinite, you know, reproducing money trees. So isn't that not also sometimes, too, we've been putting a lot of emphasis on government and patients. It's also, too, there are people in healthcare who really have abused the system and maybe have given it a bad name.
Yes, but that's because there's rewards for abusing the system.
Right.
If you have if you have these big companies selling, like General Electric, selling all these MRIs and CAT scanners, well, the more you use them, the more CAT scanners you need and the more monies that the General Electric gets. And the thing is, if I'm a Medicaid patient and I show up, I don't have to pay for the CAT scan, so I go ahead and get it done, and it doesn't cost me anything. The radiologist gets paid maybe not much, but something for reading the scan, whether it's the first, the second, or the tenth on the same patient.
Right.
That's because you have a system of rewards which rewards that irresponsible behavior. So, I mean, why should the system make it easy for the corrupt to thrive and make it difficult for the honest person to thrive? Because, okay, let's say I'm a radiologist and I say, no, you don't need that scan. And I do that to all these patients. What happens? All of a sudden I'm broke, okay?
Right.
And then you have these other people that say, no, everyone who walks through the door gets a scan and then we'll examine the patient and they get to be rich. Well, who created that system? The government created that system. They created it. And why? So General Electric could be rich, okay? So, the thing is, we're all human beings. We function on negative and positive reinforcements. If the government reinforces negative behavior, there's more negative behavior. If it penalizes positive behavior, there's less positive behavior. So basically in this country today, the honest individual, the person with integrity, is at a big disadvantage. And that's really kind of amazing. It is the dishonest person that thrives in our society today because the rewards are there for the dishonest. And that's just it. And it's the government is, look, a country is led by its leaders who tend to be in government. And the morality of a nation follows the examples of its leadership. If the leadership of a nation is highly moral and has integrity, the nation is moral and has integrity. If the government of the nation and its leaders are immoral and have no integrity, as in the case with our leadership, then the country follows by example. And then the minority of individuals who do have integrity are actually penalized for the integrity that they demonstrate. And they're actually kind of the stupid guys, because if you just go along with the system, in order to get along with the system, and by doing the unethical, you become wealthy. Well, then, so if you're ethical, you're poor, and if you're unethical, you're wealthy. It takes a real kind of a person to turn their back on easy money, in order to fulfill some inner value of morality and being ethical. And unfortunately, human psychology being the way it is, there aren't a whole lot of people that are like that. Most people will take the easy way out, and if they see an easy buck to be made, they're going to go ahead and make it. But the thing is, someone has to have the availability of the easy buck, and if the government is handing out the easy bucks for immoral behavior, you're going to get immoral behavior.
Well, you know, I think also, too, the idea of EMR, and let's start looking at outcomes. So EMR, you know, let's put everything down on a piece of paper so everybody can, quote, see it. It's going to be visible. You know, everybody will know what's going on. When, in fact, is it not really a way to keep tabs on what's going on by the government because of EMR? You know, I can remember after Katrina when all of the doctors' paper files went in the toilet. And that was right around the time they started to talk about all the physicians needed to have an EMR. That first concept, I think, even came about. And the doctors were like, no, I'm not doing that. There's just no way. It's not going to happen. They were kind of glad to see all their paper stuff go away because they could take it from now. But there was so much abuse in paper, so everybody thought, let's put it into EMR and we'll stop the abuse. But are not we really continuing it by talking about let's have outcomes now? I want to see your outcomes. So if a doctor wants to get paid, you know, before when he had paper, he was just getting paid whatever as he was doing it. Then when you brought in the EMR and you said, well, he's going to notice what I'm doing, so I need to make sure I write it down. And then now we're requiring outcomes. Well, what you're doing, you really need to make sure you're doing it the right way and you have these outcomes or I'm not paying you. What's going to happen? I mean, I can already see what's happening here. People are just saying, I'm quitting practice. And I have seen so many physicians because I used to credential them after Katrina, and I can tell you a huge percentage of physicians quit. That was number one. Then the second thing that happened was whoever was left decided to go into the large hospital groups and the large groups because of the tort law. They said, hey, let them pay my insurance. I'm not going to be liable. I'll do whatever they say, and I'll pick up my check on the way out the door. So where do you see this? Because I see it as this is all just a whole big bank of there's money in there, how are we going to get it, and how are we going to scam it to get it?
Well, the really not going to help anything at all. And
right.
It just gives a means for the government to find reasons to pay less. So what's going to happen is, logically, if you get penalized for what the government determines is less than optimal outcomes, then you're going to start selecting your patients a little bit differently. You're going to start selecting them based upon how their basic underlying health. You have patients with multiple diseases, diabetes, renal problems, kidney problems, liver problems, whatever, and which a very high likelihood of having less than an optimal result, through no fault of the physician or the hospital, but simply because that's the patient's physiology, well, then you're just not going to take care of those patients anymore because you're going to be penalized. And furthermore, the penalty won't be just for that patient. You'll be penalized in general for all your patients because you'll fall into a category of a physician that doesn't have the best of outcomes. So the people in the poorer areas of the nation will be underserved because doctors will shun those areas and shun those patients because there's a high likelihood, because of lack of education, because of chronic illnesses, because of multi-system illnesses, that those patients will not be attended to because the physician will feel that it's counterproductive to his or her economic well-being to the extent where they may not even be able to practice anymore at all.
Right.
But the thing is that the thing that's important to realize and the little dirty secret is that's what the government wants. The government wants to abandon these patients, but wants to blame the doctor and the hospital for the abandonment and not the government's payment structure. So they can point the finger at somebody else for policies in which the government itself has created.
Because it's really creating a split system. There's going to be those that they will be willing to dish out because they'll have a better outcome back, and also because they have a bigger override coming back to them. In other words, I'd love to take care of a cardiac patient because I know how many drugs I can sell them, and I know what kind of medical care that they're going to need, and it's great that they have the state insurance, right? Because you have an override. You have an override somewhere, somehow. You're getting whatever that is, it's coming back to you. There's gratification somewhere in that paradigm. But if I'm taking care of an older woman, she really has nothing, and, you know, I really can't keep dishing out all these free drugs to her, that's a separate system. So they'll really start maybe being two systems?
Well, there's already at a certain level, we already do have a separate system. Let's look at government itself. Let's look at the military. Let's look at the veterans. And I guess let's consider them kind of like in the government system. Where are they shunted off to? They've got to go to the horrendous VA hospitals. Where do the politicians go? Do the politicians go to the VA hospitals? Heck no. They go to Bethesda. They go to Wilford Hall. They go to the big, well-run military training hospitals where you have good doctors and good nurses and plenty of money, and that's where they go. So already right now, if you're a veteran under the government system, you get shunted off to the garbage hospitals, which the government runs, but you'll never find a politician go to a VA hospital. Don't you find that somewhat peculiar? All the government politicians, they can go to any hospital. They can go to a VA hospital. They all go to military hospitals or private hospitals. Whereas the veteran, they require to go to a VA hospital because the VA insurance or CHAMPIS or whatever they call it will only pay if they go to a VA-approved facility. So we already see the way the government functions. Everything for the politician, nothing for the citizen. And that's just going to be extended throughout the entire society. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have a hospitals for the wealthy, primarily politicians and cronies of politicians, and then mediocre hospitals like Cook County, Los Angeles County, places like that, for the rest of us, where we can go and wait in line and get taken care of by mediocre doctors and mediocre nurses. And we can go ahead and complain wherever we want, but get in line for that too, because there'll be a long line for that. And we're going to become kind of an animal farm type system where everyone is equal, but some are more equal than others.
You know, I go back to examples here. And since Katrina, you know, there is certain systems set up downtown where the people can go to get free help. And it can be if you don't have insurance or if you're on Medicare or Medicaid, you can go there. And it was an abandoned department store that had been flooded. You know, the escalators are still there and everything. And do you know to this day, this is 7 years later, that is still the place that is being used? And you think, why is that? You know, why is that? And you look back, within the past year, the government had taken over and has this huge medical blueprint where they're going to put in this big, massive, massive, got to be $1 trillion or billion, who knows, whatever. Zero's unbelievable of this big healthcare thing now. So they were waiting for the money to come from the storms for the government to put it in there so that they can now produce something that's bigger than everything. It's sort of like after a storm, you know, when you get money for your house and you turn around and now you've got brick on the outside and you've got marble in your bathroom and you've got the double wide refrigerator, you know. And then this is a perfect example of let's take government money and let's build what we want now because we've got all this money. And you look at it and you just go, there's so much abuse in that system. And people have been caught in it already. There's been a lot of, you know, issues here. But it is just a perfect example of government money. You know, the people in the, they're in the department store still getting their health care and they're waiting for this big $1 trillion thing. Because they wanted more money to make it bigger and better.
Right, because that money doesn't go to providers, it goes to contractors.
Correct.
People that have cement and steel and all that, and realtors and bankers. And that's the only purpose for that. I see it here where we live. There's such a, they just love building things. We're building some big VA clinic over here, which is going to be essentially of no value whatsoever. It's going to cost, that building is going to cost, I don't know, $25 million, $50 million, $100 million.
Right.
I don't know what it's going to cost. But rather than use that money so that the veteran can have health care in a private hospital, they
right.
will spend that money on a building which will be
right.
useless. Why? Because, well, for one thing, the government decided which contractor was going to build it and make a lot of money
right.
there. And also the money stayed within the bureaucracy. If I give the veteran, I say, okay, veteran, you can go to a private hospital and the government will pay for it. Well, my gosh, then they lose power. They lose funding, and they don't want to have that. So they would much rather have the veteran suffer in order to benefit the politician. And it's exactly what you're saying. You know, they can build the Taj Mahal,
mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
but the building is not what provides health care.
Correct.
So they'll have the $1 billion for the building, but they won't have the $100 for you or me.
That's
and,
right, and that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. So go ahead and sit in the building, patient. Go. You can go sit there for 8 or 10 hours or 12 hours, and you'll be have a nice building to look at with marble floors and marble walls and paintings on the wall. But because we won't pay the doctor to see you, or we won't pay them, makes it worth their while to see you, well, you're not going to get be taken care of. But at least you have a nice place to sit. And that's just what the government is. They love building. I mean, I don't know if you go to how often you go to Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
but Washington, D.C. is always under civil construction. I mean, they're always repairing, building, or whatever. And all the buildings, I don't know if you've seen, you know, governments, they're all the same. You look at the old models of what Hitler wanted Berlin, you know, the way he envisioned the city of Berlin to be built in their thousand-year Reich. It looks like Washington, D.C. Same kind of buildings, same kind of concrete block, monolithic structures built imposingly to put fear into the people to look at these big structures. Go drive down Washington, D.C. and see if not all the buildings are exactly like that. Big, gray, concrete, monolithic, filled with drones, and it's very imposing, very intimidating, but that's what government is. And so look at the old models of what Hitler wanted for Germany, and you're just, my gosh, that looks like Washington, D.C., same type of architecture.
Well, you know, it's gotten
offices
very
are
interesting.
All the same.
You know, as what you said, also, this particular building happens to be right next to the footprint where they're building all the new buildings. And you can sit in there and you're waiting and waiting. And I can remember a woman was saying to me she needed a chest x-ray and she took off the day from work because she does have a job. She just can't afford full insurance, so she paid a discounted rate to get it done there. She spent all day there and did not get it done because whatever reason, they were busy, whatever, and they never got to her. She had to take off like 3 days to finally get that chest x-ray because that was the place to go. And here she is looking outside at this big billion-dollar thing going up, and it's just like, but we can't help you here. We're too busy. We don't have the funding. We don't have this, that, and the other. But you're looking out, and you're going, but there's all this money over there. It's just such a sharp contrast. And also, this project did not go forward until they figured out the conflict with the VA. The VA was not part of the original plan. The VA is now part of the original plan.
Well, sure, everybody needs to get their little bit of filthy lucre. Look at, the Pentagon was built in about a year when it was originally built. And I think that's the biggest square footage building in the United States, I'm pretty sure. The World Trade Center, still not done. How many years is it? What year is it? 2012. So we're already at more than a decade into it, and it's still not done. And there's your difference. There's a difference right there. I mean, one is when you're purpose-driven, and the other one where corruption rules the game. And now I understand that the Port Authority of New York has wasted so many billions of dollars, even in just the preparation for the building that they're putting up, that they're not going to have any money to do any of their other functions. Well, uh-huh. You know, that's government. That's just the way that whenever they get involved, things end up taking more time, costing more, and not working as well. But that's what government is. They shoddy material, shoddy workmanship, shoddy contractors, but at Mercedes-Benz prices.
You know, we look at that all the time, you know, as doctors. A patient comes in to me and they say, I don't have any insurance, but I'm able to pay my bill. And you say, okay, you know, this is the amount for the visit, this is the amount for your medication, and can you, you know, you work with that, and that is what it is. But then you also look at it, if I have to turn around and, okay, I'm going to send it in to Medicaid will send the papers out, and how many times do papers come back? Better than 75%, the papers come back. There must have been a dot of dust on your paper. You must have had the wrong zero. You must have put a period where there shouldn't be. You must have maybe made a capital letter where there shouldn't be. It's all about what they don't want to pay for, but also the administrative costs is to even get there, to get to your final cost. I mean, I can remember working for a dentist at one time, and he said, you know, I'm supposed to charge $80 for that one surface filling. Now that it's Medicaid, they're only going to pay me $15. And then he said, I want you to follow this process. They give you 30 days to fill out the forms and get your payment to you. I'm sorry, 90 days. And, you know, you send out the papers and it comes back for this, that, or the other. Then it goes back again. Then it comes back. And then it comes back again, and you're up to maybe 2 days where you might not get payment for that. And you know what? A lot of times they don't get payment for that. And it's all because of all of this stuff in the middle that had absolutely nothing to do with the patient nor with the doctor. It just had to do with all of that mishmash of bureaucratic issues. And that's where the money, as we've said, is going. You know, that doctor was out that money. He did that for nothing. But all of his staff also filled out all the forms all of those times. He kept the office open so his staff could do that. He put stamps on the packages. So really, it's coming out of the doctor's pockets. It's coming out of the client's, you know, the patient's. It's really butt end wrong. We've got this thing flipped all the way, like you said, in the beginning of the time we started. It's all been focused way too heavy on the other end.
Right, but that's intentional.
Correct. Yeah.
All you have to have a lot of people in the government to be rejecting your paperwork because there's so much of it. And that's a patronage worker. That's somebody who's beholden to government. And look, in my practice, we have 75% Medicare and Medicaid. It costs, so 75% of my expenditure, actually more, goes to Medicare for Medicare and Medicaid requirements. But 70% of my income comes from from private commercial insurance. So right. 70% of my expenditures go to cover to receive 30% of my income. Why? Because exactly what you said, exactly to the letter, all this bureaucracy that we have to deal with at the same time that we get paid less and the bureaucracy consumes more, to the point where it's, in some instances, is not worth the cost of your personnel to even be filing for some of this stuff. I mean,
right.
If they're paying $15 or $20 for, and you have a person that you're paying to, and that's what they're doing, my gosh, pretty soon what you're paying the individual to do it is more than what you're going to get from getting that bill processed.
And then the worst part now is with the EMR and the outcomes is that it's really going to be even worse, because now you're going to say, you know, I really don't want to do this. So I think the bottom line in all this is, what do? Do you move? Do you quit practice? If you're a healthcare provider, do you move to a different state? Do you change your profession? What do you do? If you're a client, what do? Do you move to a different state that has better benefits? Do you move? You go out and live in the woods and take care of yourself? Or do you go to another country where it's socialized medicine? This, I think, is the bottom line where we're all at now. It's sort of like, okay, I'm throwing my hands up. Y'all are just going to be playing in the sandbox, but I'm tired of the sand in my shorts. I'm done. What do?
Well, you see, the thing is, that's what the government wants. It's exactly what it wants you to quit. It wants your colleague to quit. It wants me to quit, because that saves the government money. If there's no one to take care of these patients, or no one qualified to take care of a patient, the government doesn't have expenditures. So you may think that, this is going to be a protest that will spread and eventually the government will come to its senses. No. This is what the government will do is they'll say, okay, let's say you quit taking Medicaid and Medicare, let's say, and you turn your patients away. Well, the government is going to point the finger at you because you're greedy and you just don't want to take care of patients because you're only interested in money. And so we're always going to be getting the short end of the stick because the government, the government, they've got it down. They've got the bureaucracy. They've got the media. They've got the whole system under their thumb. And, it's like, okay, you know what? Okay, to be a doctor in the United States today, and maybe this is a little extreme, but it's probably akin in psychology to what being a Jewish person in Germany was in the 1930s and 40s. I mean, there's nothing, you're wrong. Doesn't matter, you're wrong. No matter what you do, you're wrong. And that's it. And your life is being decided by people who don't know what they're doing but have an agenda. And that's it. I mean, you said, okay, what do? Run into the woods and take care of ourselves? Yeah, that's about it. Because that's what the Jews had to do in Germany. They had to run into the woods and take care of themselves or they're going to get killed. And so, but that's the government. Look, government is a parasite. But there are some things it can't produce. Government, and there's some things which only government can produce. And what are those things? Concentration camps, genocide, mass murder, war, slavery. Slavery cannot exist without government. Without government protecting the institution of slavery. Pardon?
Mm-hmm. Conformance. They're going to produce, they're going to have everybody conform, period.
Right. Well, if you imagine you read the novel 1984 by Orwell, and which was written back in the 20s, I guess. He's exactly right. The way we're going is exactly in that direction, where we're all basically serfs and drones of an elitist class of individuals. And in this country, they'll live up in the Northeast, around the New York area. And the rest of us are just going to be slaves for them. Look, we live in a fascist dictatorship. And you know what? There's people who like that. You go look at the old newsreels of Hitler going down in his armored command car in Berlin, and not only Berlin, but in Austria and other places. Look at the throngs of cheering people. Those people are not put up to that. They actually believe that they're in the best system, what system was that? A fascist dictatorship. Look at Mussolini in Italy, fascist dictatorship. So you know, when I say we live in a fascist dictatorship and people say, oh, no, that can't possibly be because, I mean, the people would not tolerate that. Nonsense. There are millions of people in the United States, probably the 60 million or so that voted for Barack Obama, that want a fascist dictatorship, that want to have a king in charge. You know what? I wish, I'd like the Gallup poll to go out there and ask this question. Would you like Barack Obama to be president for life? And see, and I'll bet you anything, 40 or 50% of the people would say yes.
Yes.
That shows you how far we've strayed from our founding principles.
And they don't even understand what that means, though, you know. But a lot of people, too, do understand. They understand. Here's what they understand. They understand they don't want to worry about anything, and they want someone else to do it. Isn't that the bottom line? I don't want to worry about my health care. Someone else can do it. I don't want to worry about being responsible for myself. Let someone else do it. I don't want to be responsible for worrying about my street, my corner, my lights, my electric, my water. Let someone else do it. So really, isn't that a whole mishmash of this whole 2 hours? Is let someone else do it. I don't want to do it.
Right, but that's because somebody is forcing someone else to do it. If they were given the volition not to do it, they wouldn't do it. But the... you know, it's like that's – but look, what we know is what we're taught. We really don't know anything except what we're taught. We believe the world is round because we're taught that it is round. And there's very few of us – I know I couldn't – that could determine that mathematically, you know, come up with the equations. Now, yeah,
right.
I could walk around the world and say, oh, yeah, it's round because I just walked around it. But other than that – we believe things because we're told that by what we consider or believe to be figures of authority. And so when the government tells us something, well, we're doing this for your own good, most people will tend to believe it. We can create a system in which you don't have to pay anything. Even though, I mean, how's that possible? If no one had to pay for, if nobody paid for television, you never have any television, so somebody's paying for it. So, because someone's got to pay to build the darn thing. But we're told that, and because Tom Brokaw tells us that, or Katie Couric, or Barack Obama, George Bush, or Nancy Pelosi, or Chuck Schumer, or somebody else, they tell you that, and we say, oh, well, why would they lie? And so we believe everything we know, what we think we know, is what we're told. And we grow to believe that it to be true as the sun rising. We believe that to be true, and we don't even give it a second thought. The government's going to take care of you. The government's going to provide all of your necessities, and the government's going to make you happy. And the government gets up there and says that, and the majority of American people believe it. And that's just human psychology. But that's not the way it was supposed to be in this country, but that's the way it is now, because the founding principles of the nation have been subverted by the leadership, and they've turned the country into something that it was never meant to be. And ultimately, when you live in a fantasy world, there is a price to be paid, and we're all going to pay that price. Sooner or later, we're all going to pay that price, and it's going to be a high price.
Well, you know, you just said about education in the beginning, and I could almost remember the day to the time when I had heard it, and I believe it was through media, and they said, do we really need a college education? And I went, what? Are you serious? Are you really kidding me? And then I started listening to other people, and they're like, you don't need college, you don't need that, you don't need to learn any further, just do whatever you're doing. And it was like, oh my, I don't even know where to go with that conversation. And then after, like, you know, the past 10 years or so, I've been watching here education in this state. And they were saying, we're going to cut money from the medical school education, because my daughter is in medical school. And they said, we're going to cut it. You know, we don't really need it. We're going to cut some schools and blah, 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 whatever. And it's like they narrowed it down, and they're going to be narrowing it down to one or two places where you can actually get a medical degree in the state. And it's like, wow, they are seriously cutting this. Can you believe it? And it's like, if you go to these schools, guess what? You have to work in the state. And where do you work? You work for the government hospitals. So how is that not, how did we get this far to even have this conversation in the past year where, you know, 20 years ago, it was like, wow, you could not wait to go to college, to learn something, get out there. You were charged and you were ready to go. And now it's like, whoa, how did we end up here?
Well, behind every problem is the government when it comes to any kind of national policy. I have what I refer to as a unified field theory, that whatever problem the country has, and doesn't matter in what field, just throw a dart, pick a field: energy, foreign policy, agriculture, healthcare, education, really doesn't matter. And if you follow the path down to the source of the problem, it all leads to Washington, D.C. And that's it, because we've gone from a country in which each individual was expected to manage his or her own life and be responsible for his or her own decisions. And we've gone from that country where no one is expected to manage their own life. Everybody is dependent upon government, and government comes from one source, and that's in Washington, D.C. The people creating policy in Washington, D.C., you would not trust to babysit your children. And yet they are out there dictating to how the country is meant to function. Let's take a look at this. You know, you're a physician. I'm a physician. I'm an anesthesiologist. I don't know everything there is to know about anesthesiology, let alone medicine. I don't tell us. I know something about surgery. I don't tell a surgeon how to operate. I know something about radiology. I don't tell a radiologist how to read a film. And I'm in the field of medicine. Forget about telling an engineer how to build a bridge or how a farmer how to grow a crop. But we have this group of narcissists in Washington, D.C. that feel that they can dictate policy to every field in the United States. I remember being in Washington, D.C. one time and watching these idiotic congressmen. And in the morning, they're discussing healthcare policy. And in the afternoon, they're discussing agricultural policy. And in the evening, they're discussing energy policy. And what background do they have? They have a journalism major or a law degree or something like that. They got elected to an office. And maybe they've been there 2 years or 20 years. I remember this guy Dingell, when we were there, he was in his 54th year. 54. We think he knows about America. He's been hiding in Washington, D.C. for 50 years. And he took the seat over from his father. You know? So, I mean, what do these people know? They don't know anything. But yet their narcissism is at such an extreme level, they actually believe. And, you know, I'm not watch them on television. They actually believe that they know what's best in healthcare, that they know what's best in energy or foreign policy or agriculture or space or whatever else you want to come up with. And where they actually have no expertise in anything at all. They believe they're experts in everything, and they're perfectly comfortable making policy which will be in effect long after they have left office. That's not the way it was meant to be. That's not what the Constitution allows, but that is what we've become. We've lost the sight of what we were meant to be. We've lost our connection to our roots. We've lost our sense of ideology, and we've become a fascist dictatorship with a king, which we call a president, with an aristocracy, which we call a Congress, and a priestly class, which we call the judiciary. And that's what we have in this country. We no longer have a system of checks and balances. We have a hierarchical system with a king as president at the top and an aristocracy and the rest of us people as commoners and peasants, subjects to the aristocracy, subjects to the king, waiting for the alms to be passed out and dependent upon government and waiting every day to be told what to do or what we can be allowed to do by the government. Every day in this hospital, both as a physician, as an administrator, I'm having to conform to government regulations. Every single day. I'm under duress from the federal government and the state government in order to conform to policies which change from 1 year to the next, from 1 month to the next, policies which keep piling up, policies from different agencies, often contradictory, because you know that we are regulated by various different agencies, all of whom work independently and have their own set of guidelines that we have to adhere to, constantly being investigated, constantly being scrutinized, constantly having our time taken away from our patients where we have to meet government regulations. And I don't know, I mean, I imagine you would agree, but for me, none of these government regulations has done anything but made it more difficult to apply health care, because so much of my time is consumed and so much of what I'm allowed to do is dictated to by other people, whether it's an insurance adjuster or whether it's a clerk in the Medicaid office or a bureaucrat in Maryland at CMS, that a huge amount of my time is taken away from patient care, and that's me in microcosm, but it also the entire hospital, because the entire hospital, as an organism, has to do exactly the same thing, has to conform to these ever changing dictates of government, often contradictory, usually that make no sense and provide no benefit, but have a very high cost attached to it.
Well, you know, I think it's such a misfortune and a misstep that when patients come in, they think that the doctor is going to know me and he's going to prescribe for me, when that is so far from the truth. What you go into the doctor, what the doctor has to do now is say, this lab test tells me this. I need to go into my books. I need to look it up. What do I do here? And I give this, this, and this, and then I follow it. And after that, if that works or doesn't work, then I have to do this, this, and this. And it's no longer, in most cases, a doctor treating a patient. It is a doctor following a paradigm for outcomes based upon what they put in their EMR and what is going to be paid for, period. There is no other question on that.
Well,
is that what
you're
finding?
Right, but look at us, exactly. Look at modern medicine. Look at how many things that we accept today as correct, which a few years ago were considered absurd. For instance, H. pylori causing ulcers. Okay, I mean that was considered absurd. A lot of the technology we have today would never have been developed because they would have thought it couldn't possibly work. Open heart surgery at the beginning was thought to be, I mean, I remember, I've been in practice in medicine long enough that I remember specifically where they thought that bypass surgery for open hearts had no effect on longevity. That the only thing that it did was it made you more comfortable. Now, so today, under those guidelines, if I wanted to develop open heart, today I could not develop open heart surgery because the government would not allow
it.
Today, I could not open up a neonatal unit because the government would not allow it. Because the government would say, why are you bothering to try to salvage children that are 26 weeks gestational, post-gestation or something like that? Why would you... when we know they can't survive. And so we're not even going to allow you to treat a 25-weeker because they cannot survive and we're not going to pay for that. That's the way, that's what's happening to healthcare. Okay, so we have a certain level today. But the advances are going, they're not going to be any more advances. Or the advances will be much more slow in coming because the government is going to say, no, we're not going to pay for that. Oh, you're 80 years old, you're not going to get a heart valve. Oh, you're 60 years old on dialysis? No, you're not going to get a kidney. Oh, you're whatever. No, you're not going to get that. I remember one time we did a case. The gentleman was 90 years old coming in for an aortic valve replacement, and I thought, my God, 90 years old, isn't this kind of extreme? And I looked at his record, and I noticed that when he was 80, he had bypass surgery. So here it is 10 years later where he has survived for 10 more years of a good life, on a procedure that in most countries today he could not get. An 80-year-old cannot get heart surgery in Europe or in Canada, but in the United States they can. And so we don't, and the thing is, for the most of the population, they don't care because that's somebody else's problem. That's only the 80-year-old's problem. I remember they came out with these things about mammograms where you don't need them so often and this and that, and they had this Duke professor in medicine, a woman at that, who said, oh, that's okay, only 6,000 more women will die per year, but look at all the millions of dollars we're going to save. Well, okay, that's okay as long as you're not one of those 6,000 people.
If you're not
but
the one.
If you're not the one. And that's what the government says. We do millions of mammograms, and we only discover a few thousand cancers. So the cost-to-benefit ratio is too high, and therefore we're going to say not every year but every other year, not until you're 50 instead of 40. But I've run across women who've developed cancer in their 40s or even younger that would not have been discovered if they waited till they were 50. I've had women who've had a mammogram, and a year later they discover a cancer, a breast cancer. If they had waited 2 years, it would have metastasized. But the government doesn't care about that because the government is not interested in health care. They're only interested in their own pocketbook and what's good for them. But I thought it was obscene that you had these government officials defending the studies that they sponsored, which was going to save all this money, and it was only going to cost 6,000 women their lives a year. A small price to pay to save all this money, unless you're one of those 6,000.
And I look at it, and I look at it too, that the money would have been also better spent at that point to say what is happening with there. So when we look at radiation, you know, maybe we should be looking at how much radiation does it take to detect that. And when a woman comes in, you know, if I'm 300 pounds or I'm 98 pounds, why are they not even adjusting the radiation anymore in the machines? It's such a fallacy, you know, to think that things just are okay, you know. I'm going to shoot you with radiation just as much on a 400-pound person as I am on a 90-pound. Maybe you need to go back to your book and look at the, you know, what comes with that machine. You know, can that be adjusted? Why are we doing that? And then we wonder why some people are maybe getting problems with radiation later on. You know, so money should be spent maybe there versus saying, oh, we're just not going to do it anymore.
Well, you make a good point because the overutilization of CAT scan imaging, for one example, in which I was told by radiologists recently that a single CAT scan is like getting 600 chest x-rays.
Right.
And when I see all of these kind of routine repeat CAT scans done because there's no incentive to do a diagnosis or an examination because you get paid whether the CAT scan should be done or not done, and then the patients come to, like, demand it, you know, show up because they don't have to pay for it. So, I hit my head on the wall. If you bump your head against the wall, I bump my head against the wall, we don't go rolling into the doctor for a CAT scan, but a Medicaid patient will. You know, and I've seen it over and over again. They hit their head, and they didn't lose consciousness. You know, and there's no altered sensorium and all of that. And they'll show up and they'll demand their CAT scan, and they'll get it because they don't have to pay for it. And the radiologist is not going to say anything, but he gets his $20 or $50 for reading the darn thing. And that's the system the government has created. So, I mean, we have a hospital. We do dental procedures. 25% of our population. Children, 20% of our children population are on Medicaid, but 100% of the children having dental work in the hospital are Medicaid. Why is that? Well, because just as you were saying, the mother who's on Medicaid is not paying for it, so she doesn't care if her kid's teeth rot. She doesn't care if her child brushes their teeth or not. It doesn't matter because when the teeth rot, they go to the dentist. And they don't have to pay for it. And so we do all these poor children, because they don't know any better, the poor child, and, you know, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, they have these horrendous teeth, And we do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these procedures, and about 98% of them on Medicaid children. Why Medicaid? Why only Medicaid children? Why not anyone else? Well, because no one else, because my parents said, look, you brush your teeth because I don't want to pay the dentist. Gosh darn
it.
And that's what I tell my kids. Oh, no, you go in there, you brush your teeth because I don't want to have to go to the dentist and pay all that money. So, but if you're on Medicaid, it doesn't matter. Because what does it matter? I just go to the dentist. It doesn't cost me anything. And you multiply that. You want to have another kid? Go ahead. Medicaid pays for it. If I want to have another child, I'm beyond that already. But if I want to have another child, I say, oh well, let me think about this for a second. What does it entail? What are the costs? What are the repercussions? What are the associated things that are with that? And so I think these things through, and we make a decision. On the other hand, you have someone on Medicaid. They don't care. You know, they don't pay for it. They get extra money for the kid, for the child. They that their health care is free. Their education is free. They get stipends. They get free milk, and they get free diapers, and they get free all this and that and all the other stuff. So where's the break? Where's the incentive? But why always say, okay, knowing that, why does the government permit it? Why? Because every one of those people is dependent upon government, is going to vote for big government because that is how they live. So it's a system the government itself has created. You really cannot blame the individual because of human psychology. They take advantage of it because that's the system. But if the system wasn't there, they wouldn't be rewarded for the irresponsible behavior. But the system is there to promote irresponsible behavior because government loves irresponsible behavior because those people are dependent upon government. It's a vicious, vicious, vicious circle. A cycle.
It's like the black hole is on everything. Well, you know, Dr. Gelman, it's been an absolute pleasure having you talk to us today. And we have about a minute left. And, you know, I was just such an absolute pleasure. All of these things, you know, going back and forth, people I'm sure think about. And I think we've given them a really good basis to have a further discussion and figure out what they may need to think about.
I appreciate you giving me this soapbox to stand on. So,
well, you know, I think it really is important for people, as you say, to have a soapbox to stand on so that other people can listen and say, does that work for me? That doesn't work for me. Or maybe that's something I need to think about. And that's really my purpose of the show, is to say to people, I'm telling you what I'm thinking. Dr. Gelman's telling you what he's thinking. Take where our experience has been, and you really need to think about where you're going from here.
Well, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So it's been fun.
Is there anything you'd like to tell anyone in closing? We have about a minute. What you may say, if it was you today, what would be your first thing you would be thinking about?
Well, I think people need to try to understand what the country was meant to be and what made us a successful country, and how far we have deviated from that past, and that our founding fathers created for us. And what can I say? Try to go beneath the surface. Don't just listen to what you hear on the radio or listen or see on television. Don't take for granted that what the person is telling you is accurate and true. Try to educate yourself and learn the truth. To me, I tell you what I have found. Once you can implant a little seed of doubt, that seed will grow. And from that, you develop people that search out what is true and will not be so easily bamboozled by the politicians and the government.
Well, you know, I hope we have spewn a lot of seeds today, because we really did talk about a lot of topics, and I'd like to thank you for doing that. And there was a lot of topics in there that people should really listen to and play this over and over and get some ideas. So, Dr. Gelman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you. So if anybody would like more information about Dr. Gelman, his link is included on the show description on this page. If you'd like to have a discussion further, please send me an email. My website is on the show description on this page. It's outoftheboxhealthcare.com. You can just send me a note through the Contact Us page. I'll be happy to get back to you. And, yes, this is something that we will be watching and seeing how things go in about the next few months. Healthcare is not easy, and it's really all about us. So thank you so much, everyone, for being with us today. And until tomorrow, have a great day.